Hello and welcome to episode 52 of Popcorn Optional and the first of Ketchup, a member of the Popcorn Optional family where we review classic films from back in the day that none of us have ever seen before. Because everything has to do with food on this podcast, even though we never talk about it, we're calling it Ketchup. Get it? Ketchup.
Wait, are we spelling it with a C or a K?
Oh, it's for sure spelled with a K. Okay. It's spelled just like ketchup. So,
I will just quickly say we never voted on this. Cameron's just making a decision and surprising us.
Executive decision, ketchup. Our first film that we're doing as part of this is 2001 A Space Odyssey, something that all of us went through film school and never saw.
Yeah. I will say Baylor Film School, they did not do a good job of showing us the like big films. Instead, we watched Rocky V because my professor knew the cinematographer and it was terrible.
Oh, yikes.
We did watch did we ever talk about the name of the school we went to? I don't think we do. So it shall remain secret, but we did watch
totally threw Baylor under the bus.
So at Baylor, we did happen to watch every single movie made by someone who ever went to Baylor.
Yes.
So there's that.
That's true.
Yes.
Not many people, and they haven't made many good movies.
No.
Although I will say, Fandango is underrated. That's a pretty good movie.
You know, Rookie of the Year. Or not Rookie, they're Rookie. That one. That one's not bad. All right, my name is Cameron Salina. As always, I'm joined by my co-hosts Jake Brown and Trevor Allison. We got a lot of things to get to tonight because we're going to be talking 2001 A Space Odyssey, as well as a couple items from news, doing a new segment, and as always, ending with our content of the week. So let's go ahead and get right into it. This week saw the release of the trailer for the much-anticipated Shane Black film, The Predator. And there wasn't much feedback or buzz after this trailer whatsoever on the internet. I feel like it kind of just came and went. So are you guys more excited about this movie after this trailer?
No, this is a bad trailer. Not an interesting cast. I don't know, man. I saw this trailer and I was just like, well, that is going to come out and we're probably going to have to see it. And I really don't want to,
yeah.
Which is really what you want with your trailers.
So Keegan-Michael Key is in it. So,
I mean, he's been in a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah, but he's usually pretty good. Also, I think we kind of discussed this, but I think Cam is with me here. Like, I'm always interested in Shane Black and what he's doing. He does things just a little bit differently than everyone else. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is kind of an American British gangster film. And so I think that it's going to be worth seeing what he can do for the character. I don't feel like the original is that good. I think it's somehow culturally iconic in a bizarre way. And maybe this is good, and maybe 10 years from now we'll get a good Alien versus Predator instead of, you know, the other one.
I think there's a lot of things that could go right with this film. You know, Boyd Holbrook is an up-and-coming actor that I'm definitely interested in. He did great in Logan. And the cast is great. Shane Black's good. I don't know. Maybe it's just the Predator design or something. I don't know. It doesn't look great. And the trailer wasn't that great either. I don't know how good of a choice it'll end up being setting this in the suburbia of America. That seems like a really weird place to put this film.
At some point, they have to end up in the woods terrified, right?
In the woods of suburbia.
Like the Predator thing.
Right. I think what's weird to me about these films is so far, this is from my very limited knowledge. I think I've seen the original Predator, the one from 2010, and then I've actually proudly seen Alien vs. Predator and Alien vs. Predator Requiem.
Oh, I couldn't do Requiem after the first one.
Most people couldn't do the first one, so good on you for that at least. But my limited knowledge is that the only way to defeat them is to like somewhat mask your heat signature, which just creates like the like least interesting idea of like the only way you can beat these people is to hide your heat signature. And so unless they invent something new it just feels like a weird. There's just a lot of weird things about this one. Like why do we need this?
Because the creature design is going to make money.
Make the money. In other news, Brad Bird, director of The Incredibles, Incredibles 2, Iron Giant, Mission Impossible. Which one was he directed?
Was it Ghost Protocol? Number 4, I guess.
The one where Tom Cruise says Mission Impossible? That one? Okay, yeah.
Yes. The best one in the series?
No,
yes,
Trevor. Right. Nope, get out of here. has an open invitation from Lucasfilm to direct a Star Wars movie or work on some sort of Star Wars project. So it got me thinking, what's one director that you guys are curious to, if you could choose, like, this person do a Star Wars film, who would you guys pick?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think for me, it would be Denis Villeneuve, just like some total spin-off side saga story thing that he just has total control of in the Star Wars universe. I think it would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I will say, first of all, I'm totally cool with Brad Bird being given a Star Wars project. I think I didn't see Tomorrowland. I know that everyone didn't love it, but basically everything else he's worked on or been in charge of has been good to very good to great. Totally cool with that. The first director that comes to mind for me for Star Wars is I would love to see a David Fincher neo-noir intimate crime film set in the Star Wars universe.
Mm.
That was going to be my suggestion. Just like a...
Oops.
Like a Boba Fett film directed by David Fincher would be...
It's like a Zodiac 7 kind of thing?
Yes. Barring that, you know, the other dream would be to have Donald Glover work in some capacity. And wait, that's happening. So the Donald Glover
dream continues.
What about a
Lando film?
I don't think that'll ever happen.
We need to know more about Lando.
I think Troy learned his lesson in the first season of Community when he ate a whole cookie by himself and then realized that sometimes a cookie cake is too much cookie. And too much of a good thing is a bad thing.
That show's the best.
So there's a deep cut for you fans of Community. Alrighty. That's all we have for news and trailers, though. We're going to get on to a new segment inspired by some news that came out this past week. So, in this past week of news, there was the announcement that whoever is planning on rebooting Friday Night Lights. And I don't know what your guys' experience with the film is, but if I remember right, we all are huge fans of the TV show.
Of course.
And Coach Eric Taylor specifically.
Yep. Yep. And Tammy Taylor. And, you know, QB1, QB2, everybody.
Tammy.
RB1, WR1.
Vince.
K1.
Honorable mention, Vince.
Vince. Oh, Michael B. Jordan. Oh, Timmy Riggs. All right, well, that's enough down nostalgia lane. So it prompted me, though, to think about the idea of what films should be untouchable. Like, what's something outside of the obvious? Like, no one's ever going to reboot Star Wars, but people will make sequels to it, or, you know, that's fine. It's more of what films or TV shows should not be touched from the past. Like, another one would be Lord of the Rings. They should kind of just stop with those. Don't ever try and remake Lord of the Rings. Don't try and reboot it. Just leave it be and just let it do its thing. So, you know, the big question is, outside of the obvious films, what films or TV shows should not be rebooted or remade?
For me, I'm going to throw one at you that you guys probably aren't expecting. And that is The Truman Show.
Mm.
Because I think this is an idea that, like, in 5 years, someone's going to be like, oh man, social media and like YouTube, you know what we should do? We should reboot The Truman Show, but like in like the 2020s when like the internet and blah, blah. Stop it. No. Stop it. Jim Carrey is perfect. That movie is perfect. Don't touch The Truman Show.
That's the most terrifying movie that's not a horror film I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I know, but it's so good and so like happy in a weird way. It's just such a good movie.
And I
don't touch The Truman Show.
When you look at what makes that film untouchable, I think there's like several different things. One of which being, you're never going to find a talent as good as Jim Carrey to carry that film. Like, it's just not possible. Because at that time, that was like the peak of Jim Carrey.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Jim, it kind of got old because he's the only, like, because he kind of does the same thing. I mean, not all. I mean, he does serious roles,
Trevor,
too. But
don't. Okay.
But listen, the Jim Carrey comedy thing is kind of old now, but it's like no one else is Jim Carrey. Like it's there's not even anyone that does anything close to him. So I don't think it would have a completely different feel with anyone else.
Yeah. So okay. Good first suggestion. Truman Show. You should never be touched. Trevor, what's your recommendation?
Okay, mine is kind of a little bit, definitely a different direction, but also from the 1990s. And this is something that just, I feel like, again, comes from maybe such a unique vision from who its director is. And mine is Pulp Fiction.
Ooh.
It just is what it is. Like, the cast, the storytelling, the... I mean, no one else had made a movie like this before. No one else is Quentin Tarantino.
I'm going to do a hot take here.
I'm going to be with Jake on this hot take.
I agree with you. I'm going to agree with you that no one should remake Pulp Fiction because Pulp Fiction isn't that good of a movie.
There we go. Thank you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Okay, so
I think it's really overrated.
As I feel...
It's very unique. Like, it's only Quentin Tarantino could make that movie, and... It is, I think, the best that that movie's going to be, but it's just not a very interesting story or movie to me, in my opinion.
Interesting. I think it's really good. Like, probably, maybe my favorite Tarantino.
Ooh.
Mm. Ooh, surprising.
Besides Inglourious Bastards.
I think Inglourious Bastards is his...
That's
his untouchable. That's like the best. Okay. And Kill Bill is pretty great too. I've said this, I think, before
overrated.
On the podcast, though. I'm not a huge Tarantino fan, so maybe that plays into it. But Pulp Fiction is one of those things that I'm like, there's nothing about that that's maybe his writing. Outside of that, though, I'm like, you could remake that film or do Pulp Fiction 2. And I wouldn't be upset because there's nothing about it that's like, maybe the Royale with like the Samuel Jackson parts are great. And I think that's always my problem whenever I get with films like this, it's always hard because you have so many different sequences and so many different, you know, storylines that some of them are bound to not hit. And unfortunately in this, like the Samuel Jackson part hits real big and everything else just kind of falls aside and is forgettable.
I will say, I think that there's a couple of unique roles here. One of them is Samuel L. Jackson. I think that Uma Thurman is kind of the only one who could have done that way. But the Bruce Willis role is pretty meh and bland. But yeah, I think when I think of like remaking something, I think of a unique vision and a unique story, and it just wouldn't like, why would you remake this? It would be really dumb.
But you could easily see somebody being like, let's make a Pulp Fiction 2 and pick up the storylines of Samuel Jackson character and John Travolta and what happened with Ving Rhames and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Right. I guess that's true. I was going to choose something else that I think you guys would have just agreed with off the bat and we wouldn't have had much to talk about. So I'm glad that you guys don't agree because it's more interesting.
Look, I will always take the controversial pick over the easily agreeable one.
Yeah, agreed.
And look, it's not easy to say that I hate Pulp Fiction because I'm about to talk negatively about another famous film. And I'm going to, you know, I feel like anybody that loves movies that listens to this podcast, we're going to lose so much credit because of tonight's episode. So I don't know. Maybe this episode never gets released. Who knows? Okay, so my pick...
We will censor ourselves.
My pick, and the reason I say this film is because I feel like once or twice a year, there's rumblings of another one of these getting made, or a reboot of this, or they're going to make a fourth one or something. And in my opinion, this is just a classic that just shouldn't be touched. Just let it be. Let us enjoy what we have. Don't ruin what we have. And that is Back to the Future, the whole trilogy. Please never make a fourth one. Please never reboot it with Steve from Stranger Things. I don't care how charismatic you have of a lead. Nothing will ever compare to Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd in this film. It's to me, it's something that you shouldn't... There's nothing a fourth film could add to this to me that would be worth ruining or the risk of ruining what's already there.
I completely agree.
Yeah, I am going to agree with you. Also, because each one progressively got worse. So, like, let's not continue that trend.
Right.
Yeah, I could make an argument that 3 should not have been made. I like 2, and I think 2 is good and adds to the story. It's definitely a little more cartoonish.
2 is almost, like, more iconic in, like, the imagery that's still brought up today than 1 is.
Right, like that Biff Tannen is our president.
Right. Or the Jaws 15, or the Cubbies winning the World Series type stuff.
Uh-huh, right.
All accurate. All of those happen. Yes. Biff is our president right now.
We're so happy that Spielberg only made Jaws films over the past 30 years. Alrighty. Well, that's our new segment, The Untouchables, inspired by Friday Night Lights. So we'll be back sometime in the future, maybe with another segment of this, if you guys like it. If you didn't like it, just let us know kindly. We're going to go into our review, and I don't know how you guys feel about this. So we're doing a review tonight on a movie that's a classic film that none of us have ever seen. So somehow, like I said earlier, none of us have ever seen 2001 A Space Odyssey, the famous Stanley Kubrick film from 1968 that recently celebrated its 50th anniversary.
I want to put this in perspective. I was thinking about this today with regard to the 50th anniversary. This film was released closer to the end of World War I than it was to today.
Yikes.
Wow.
So
amazing.
It's been out for a while.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
That's crazy.
It's weird to think about. Part of this is, you know, we wanted to watch in this down week in between, you know, the big summer blockbusters. We wanted to go back and revisit a classic film with fresh eyes through, you know, we all love movies and we all love classic movies too. I mean, I can probably pick out films that are classic films from back in the day that we all love. And it's more about, you know, we wanted to all watch something for the first time that we've heard about for years and years and never just had the opportunity. And I feel like every film person has those movies that they've just never been able to check out. What did you guys know about 2001 A Space Odyssey going into it?
I knew about the amazing match cut. I knew about Hal. I knew about the music. I knew that it was in space. And really, that was kind of it. And I can't believe that I just now have seen this movie. I can't believe we all went to film school and we didn't see this movie. Baylor Film School's like film watching program was garbage.
Yeah.
But yeah, I
hopefully
I
none of our professors
movie,
listen
not
to this.
Really. Hey guys, fix your program. Ask me. But. Yeah, I didn't really know what to expect that much with this movie. And we'll get to thoughts here in a little bit, but I was surprised.
Yeah, I knew it was Kubrick. I knew about Hal. I knew that Hal was... Are we spoiling things? I knew that Hal was
bad.
Been
out for 50 years.
Or did bad things. I've heard it referenced just as far as special effects within the context of Douglas Trumbull, the godfather of modern special effects. And yeah, I knew that it was long, and I knew that it was in space, kind of like Jake said. I didn't really know specifically what goes on. I didn't know that I would not recognize a single actor or actress in it. Mm-hmm. I knew about the theme song, which I thought was written for the movie, but it turns out was written in the 1890s. So that was kind of a disappointment.
Yeah.
Got it for free.
Yeah. Public domain.
Yeah, man.
So there's that. But yeah, it was, like Jake said, it was in some ways what I expected and in some ways not at all what I expected.
Yeah, so I'm with you guys. I knew about Hal. I feel like it's impossible to, you know, at least go through film school or follow certain people on Twitter and not either like have seen the last frame of the movie or, you know, the sequence of the astronauts running around the loop inside the... spacecraft, and I'd seen the monolith. I knew that it started off with apes and didn't really know how it transitioned other than, like Jake said, the match cut of the bone up in the air and then the spacecraft. And so I had like a very opaque view of what this film was, but like the finer details knew nothing about. And you know, what's interesting is this film came out in 1968, and you know, if you look at where the film is at in that time, there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of transitions of, in Hollywood going on with the MPAA coming out in 1968. Bigger studios are starting to take chances on new directors, and this is where you get the rise of, you know, the George Lucases, the Spielbergs, the Coppolas. You know, Kubrick's starting to make his rise, and especially with this. The year that this came out, 2001 A Space Odyssey, was actually the highest grossing film that year. It made $56 million, which was considered monumental at the time.
1968 is kind of where the last vestiges of the old studio system are kind of going away.
Right.
You have your directors that only work for one studio, and you have these studios putting all of their money into two or three films a year, and the giants like Spartacus, Ten Commandments kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we really kind of, this is kind of, and I think that this is sort of an interesting way to kind of bridge that. And I feel like this movie really set the stage for where science fiction movies went afterwards.
Yes. And I think you can definitely feel that legacy. And, you know, outside of even just film culture, this was, you know, the moon landing happened in 1969. And this was actually the last movie made about people being on the moon before the actual moon landing. And so, you know, on top of that, you have, you know, there's still kind of that Roswell feeling. It happened in 1947, and it starts to see a resurgence later in the late 60s, early 70s. And so there's all this like alien stuff going on. There's moon landing, and there's so much unknown about space going on that for this film to come out at that time is a very interesting placement of a film in culture. You know, I think there are films that have come out recently that are, you know, years from now we may look at in the same vein of, wow, that's such an interesting capsule of that time period and how that time period views the future or views society during that time and whether they got it right or not. So the other thing that's interesting is, you know, with the 50th anniversary, you have all these directors coming out talking about how influential this film is and how it made their career. You know, Edgar Wright tweeting about how he remembers seeing this back in the day and how much it influenced him and his visual style. And, you know, and then you get on the other side, people like James Cameron, who came out and talked about the sterility of the film and how it lacks emotional balls. So, you know, not,
can't believe I agree with James Cameron.
Yeah. After, you know, all of his terrible comments about Wonder Woman last year and, you know, just, I mean, he's the guy
making Avatar.
Making Avatar and saying it's, you know, we're going the Godfather route with this, which who knows what he means by that, but, you know.
Yeah, for James Cameron to say that this lacks emotional balls and he made Avatar.
Yeah.
Come on, bro.
You guys didn't weep during the scene at the tree with Neytiri and Jake Sulu?
When the tentacles intertwine or whatever?
I can't believe you remember their names. Like that. Blows my mind.
Jake, the things that get stuck.
Jake
Sully.
Yeah.
Yeah, the things that stick in my brain really frustrate me because I can remember anything about a movie, but I can't remember anything about anything else. So, yeah. That's a very good attribute that I normally list on job applications. Okay, so here we are. We've set the stage for this film. Let's do it. Let's get to our general thoughts of 2001 A Space Odyssey. And we should say this film's been out for 50 years. We're just going to go ahead and talk about the film freely. Spoilers are going to be everywhere. So if you haven't seen it like us, we can't blame you because we just saw it. But, you know, maybe stop listening if you don't want to be spoiled on a 50-year-old film. So, all right. General thoughts on 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Wow. Okay, so this is a movie that when the ending credits played, I hated it. I was so mad. Like, it felt like such a waste of time. And then I've just been like, but I can't get it out of my brain. Like, I've been stewing on it for, like, since I watched it. And I just can't stop wondering, what is this about? And coming up with theories. This movie is so deep. This is not entertainment. This is like a PhD level essay through the medium of film about humanity. And I think this is a film that you have to see multiple times to like really process it. You have to think incessantly about it for it to make any sense and for it to be enjoyable. And honestly, this is a movie that I think I respect a lot more than I like after seeing it. I want to see it again, but overall, did I enjoy my actual watch experience? No. But I have had a lot of like really deep thoughts that I probably wouldn't have had if I hadn't watched this movie, and like, what is this movie about? And so, you know, maybe in a year I'll say this is my favorite movie ever after seeing it again.
Oh gosh.
Who knows? This is a weird movie. Like, I don't know what to do with it.
Look,
I don't know what to do with my hands. My hands are just by my face right now. Like, I
realize like one of the things I love about watching a movie at home is I'm able to take notes like on my phone or my computer and not worry about pulling out a phone in the middle of a screening. I went back through my notes today as I was we were prepping for tonight's podcast. And multiple times I wrote down, what the heck is going on? What just happened? Who's that? Who's this? What does that mean? It's just there's a fine line between a film being pretentious and a film being artistic. And this film takes that line and just throws mud all over it. And I don't know what I mean by that. I don't know what the film means by that. I don't know anything. And I feel dumb for not getting this movie because apparently, I mean, this is Spielberg's like most influential film. And so in all seriousness, I see the inspiration in it. I see the technical elements that are great. I respect it for that. Am I ever going to watch this again? No, I don't think so. And I realize that probably makes me a bad amateur film critic or whatever you want to call me, but it's just not for me. I didn't get it. I really didn't. You know, the 10-minute mind trip sequence in space, just, I don't know. What? I don't know.
We'll talk more about the, like, pretentiousness of it here in a little bit, because I've totally agreed with you, but I've had a realization of why he's doing what he's doing, I think. I mean, I might just be totally overanalyzing everything, and maybe Kubrick's a huge pretentious asshole. Like, that might be true.
That's my favorite thing about this movie. Is in my head, honestly, this film means nothing. And Kubrick is just messing with everybody. He's like, this film is utter garbage. I just have to put it out there because, you know, who knows? And then everybody caught on and started sending him handwritten letters about the brilliance of it. And he's like, yeah, that's definitely what I meant.
What's funny is you could make the same exact argument about The Shining.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
See, I think what happened is that he intentionally took away a third of his narrative to see what you would get out of it when you watched it.
Hmm.
Which third?
That might be true.
Like the middle third?
No, like sporadically, like at random.
Trevor, what are your thoughts?
So my general thoughts are, this is the best example I've ever seen to start the debate of, are movies arts or are movies entertainment? And
yeah.
I think that you could have a really good discussion with this as the base for that. I think that this is an important film. I think that if you want to make films, you need to see this film. Because there are so many things technically that are just astounding. This is a technical masterpiece.
Yeah. Star Wars came out 9 years after this, and this looks better than Star Wars.
This looks better than things that come out today.
If this hadn't existed, I don't think Star Wars would have existed.
True.
At least not as how it existed. I think it would have existed because so much of the inspiration for Star Wars is from classic Japanese samurai films, but I don't think the same aesthetic would have been there, or the same, you know, props and physical ships.
The scale. Yes. I don't think it would have been on the same scale. Yeah, that's fair to say. You can see how it's influential, but I didn't like it. At almost no point did I enjoy myself. Mm-mm. Almost every shot in this movie is too long. Like, literally 98% of the shots in this movie are too long. The only ones that aren't too long are the ones that happen in less than a second.
You mean like the split second, like, cut to his face freaking out during the mind trip?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Bizarrely bored and mesmerized at the same time occasionally, especially by the apes. I was like, this isn't interesting, but I also want to know what they're doing. So I guess it is interesting. I don't know. My favorite shot of the film is the Pan Am space cruiser docking with the space station and syncing up their rotation patterns.
Yeah.
I loved that sequence.
Interstellar.
I want to give a special shout out to my wife who, to end her Mother's Day, watched this film, at least most of it, with me. At a certain point, I think halfway through the movie, she kind of just walked out of the room and then came back in the middle of the mind trip sequence at the end.
My wife did the same thing where, like, she was like, I'm going to get some work done while we watch this. And I was like, yeah, that's totally fine. And within like 5 minutes of the ape sequence, she was like, I'm going to go upstairs and work up there and watch Arrested Development. So.
There we go.
My wife watched the whole thing while she was in the room, wasn't paying attention. And I, about 45 minutes in, I was like, what do you think about this? She goes, I don't need it. And like, picked up her phone.
So shout out to the moms and to the future moms.
Moms of the troops.
Moms of the troops. There we go. I was trying to think of the line. Dang it. Thank you, Jake. Okay, so, goodness. There's so much to talk about with this film, which is the exact opposite of what I thought was going to happen at the end of last night. Because, Jake, you're right. As I sit with this film, I think about it more. There's more to talk about. Do I like it any more? No. And I'll be honest. Normally when I don't like a film, I don't feel bad about it whatsoever. Like, even if it's like a really great, like Shape of Water, won a best picture this year, I don't feel bad for saying I didn't like it.
Well, I didn't like it either, so don't feel too bad.
Right, but what I'm saying is, like, I felt really like, it made me question myself doing this podcast for the fact that I didn't like this film. I was sitting there going, should I have a podcast if I don't like this film? Like, do I deserve that? Because I don't understand what everybody else is seeing?
I think the problem, it would be a problem if you did not see any value whatsoever in the film. I don't think you have to like anything to review films.
Yeah. I will say, I think I'm interested to get into like our discussion here in a second, because I think I have a lot of rebuttals of things that you don't like of why he's doing it. That doesn't mean you need to like it, but I think I can explain, which, like, once I had these realizations, I was like, oh, maybe I do like it.
Okay. So Jake, start
be very impressed if you can make me want to watch it again.
Jake, start dropping some knowledge on us.
Okay. Gosh. So I 100% agree with you guys that this is very slowly paced. Like, this is painfully slow at some points, especially compared to the kind of movies that we've become accustomed to today.
This is an Infinity War.
But I would say
this is the opposite of Infinity War.
Not Infinity War. It's there's no dialogue for 25 minutes. The first 25 minutes is... I was like, is this Planet of the Apes?
And not in the cool Wally way either.
No. It is it's a little tough, but I mean, it's a 50-year-old movie, so you gotta give it some breaks. But it is intentionally slow because it is like moving at this hypnotic slowness. It's editing, it's music, it's cinematography. The dialogue, everything is, like you said, Trevor, mesmerizing and incredibly boring at the same time. And what it's doing, in my opinion, I might just be giving meaning to nothing, it's slowly breaking down the walls of the viewer to then present the ending to you. Because this came out 50 years ago. Like, if you take out all of the atmosphere and like the slowness and if you injected like crazy VFX, super high-paced editing, intense visuals, intense soundtrack, I think then making that hard pivot and not having that time of like the crazy space sequence and that ending, it just like happens. It doesn't leave you thinking with like, what the heck? You immediately put up walls with something like that 50 years ago. And so today, we as the audience are more accustomed to seeing things like that and being thrown crazy concepts in a nonlinear structure. But back then, that would have like blown people's minds. Annihilation, people would have pooped their pants in the theater
Oh, yeah.
if they saw Annihilation.
For
so
sure.
I think the slowness
it's being used as a tool to lull the audience into the world and the questions that Kubrick is posing and the themes that he's addressing at the ending of the film.
Okay.
I will say, to your point, the film that won Best Picture of the year this came out is Oliver! Exclamation point. The musical version of Oliver Twist. So I think, I mean, also this film, that Oliver also beat this film in Best Art Direction. So,
oh my God.
I have not seen Oliver and I probably never will, but I can say that was definitely wrong.
The Academy is, we give too much attention to the Oscars. Mm-hmm. I think that is a fact.
Do you guys ever think of, like, whenever I think about how much credit the Academy gets, I always think of School of Rock when Jack Black is, like, freaking out that they didn't win, and then Freddie the drummer is just like, man, the Sex Pistols never won anything. That doesn't mean that they weren't rock and roll. I always think about that line. I don't know why. That's what always pops in my head.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so thank you, Richard Linklater. I hear what you're saying, Jake. But do we really...
I didn't say you have to like it.
No, no. And so here's the thing is, we've done 52 episodes now. We're fully at the point where it's like, we understand that we're all going to have different opinions and we're all, you know, we can talk about things in a way that's... You can sway people, because I feel like I've been swayed multiple times on this podcast in a positive way. I've been swayed, like, there's multiple times where we talk about something and Trevor or Jake will say something and I'll be like, wow, you know, that's a good point. I think I do like this film more than I thought. As I was looking at this film, I kept going, is there just something in the film that's like, I don't like that general style of film, or I don't like that. And, you know, part of it was like, okay, do I not like silent films? And it's like, no, I like silent films. I like, there's quite a bit of silent films I like. Okay, is it the pacing? It's no, I'm fine with slow pacing. Like, shoot, Blade Runner had pretty slow pacing, and maybe not this slow, but... And then it's, you know, okay, do I not like weird things that make you think? No, I love weird things that make me think. I think all of it just feels so purposefully like a middle finger in your face of like, I don't ever want you to understand a single thing from this film, and I want you to like constantly like feel inadequate and lower than me, which is, yes, Kubrick is a genius in a lot of ways when it comes to filmmaking. But do like, and I keep going back to like, okay, do we really need a 25-minute sequence in the beginning of Apes? And I understand like that is a, you're setting up the dynamic for humanity. Okay, so humanity is alive. They're thriving, they're living, and then somebody poses a threat, and then something comes in, the monolith comes in, and they discover the ability of weapons, and then, you know, they use their progression to kill and destroy. And I get what that is setting up then with Hal and the symbolism of technology later on in life. And I'm great with that. I respect that. But there's just so many things that are just like a drag you through the mud when it could have been like so much shorter or so much a better way to get to that point. In like within the film, I think.
I agreed with you earlier today. Like, I think my first note after I finished watching this was like, you could have cut an hour out of this and the plot would not have changed at all. But the thing about this movie and Kubrick in general is his films are not, they don't have resolve. Like, they're intended to invoke a response. They're intended to inspire questions instead of answering them. And like, Kubrick himself won't talk about the ending of this film. And so, like,
right.
I think he's aware that giving a specific answer ruins the response the viewer has during the viewing itself. Like, a response at all in his mind is a success.
Right.
And so the atmosphere and the length and the slowness and like the whole ape scene, which I have a few ideas of what the film is trying to say and stuff, which we can get in a little bit. But like, those are so key to having the film say what I think he's trying to make it say.
I don't have a problem with it being unresolved and being and having kind of a strange ending, it's kind of assaulting on your senses near the end, but which is intentional, obviously. But my issue is that with the narrative is not that it's unresolved, it's that I don't care about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's like there's nothing in this that makes me care about anyone. When people die in this, I don't feel anything at all because they're just people. They're not even people. They're just like placeholders for within the structure. There's nothing in it that makes me emotionally invested whatsoever.
Because it's not like you're, it's not a typical narrative film. Like they just represent humanity. Like they aren't characters really at all, you know? Like
I almost think that's meant to show, I can't believe I'm arguing for this film. I almost feel like that's meant to show like the emotional detachment that humanity gets the further we get, the closer we get to like a singularity or the more technology driven we become. Like the less that we focus on people and the more that we focus on technology to do our own needs, the more that we then lack that emotional connection. Which the one time that we actually have an emotional connection to a character is before this technology and the HAL 9000 kind of take off. It's, you know, the dad on the like spaceship going out and his daughter's birthday. He has to miss his daughter's birthday to go handle this situation on the moon. And that's the one like emotional attachment that we're given is we've finally gotten to this place where we can care. And then we care so much about progress that we then forget to be humans.
Yeah. Agreed.
I hate that I just did that.
Cameron,
come over here with me.
No, and that's the thing is like, in a lot of ways, I respect this film. Jake, I think that you're right. And Trevor, you're right as well. I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle in that one of my, like, so I'm fine with ambiguous endings. Like I'm great with them, but at least give us the clues to formulate our own opinions. I feel like this film just kind of
but they're there.
Okay. So let's get to it then. There's a baby floating in space, the size of a planet at the end of this film. What the heck does that mean?
Okay. So wait, I before I'm going to give you my half baked ideas on this.
Okay.
So,
go for it.
So the monolith represents some kind of jump forward in evolution. So apparently,
Dr. David Bowman.
Bowman, that's like, yeah, David Bowman.
Yeah, Bowman. Whatever he learns at the end is, I don't know if he becomes one with something or learns something or enters some kind of alien something, but it causes some sort of ginormous rebirth. Like humanity has now jumped evolutionarily to be like transcendent from the physical world. That's kind of my take on that bit, but that's like not thinking through it very much at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you want my theories? I have
Them.
If you just want to start rattling off theories, and me and Trevor can jump in whenever we want to, but I'm curious because I feel like you've probably done the most thinking about this film post seeing it, and you're the most film minded of us. So,
yeah, I would disagree with that statement in different ways, but sure. Okay, so totally agree with Trevor that like the monoliths represent like the catalyst for the next stage in human evolution. And we see that like apes become closer to man. Man goes to space, finds the monolith on the moon, which then sends a signal to Jupiter. Man goes to Jupiter. And through that, we go through a wormhole. And through that whole situation, we become, like Trevor said, this multidimensional cosmic being. His body passes away, but his soul lives on as a star child, cosmic child, space child, whatever. Basically, it's humankind entering a new era of existence. And sure, yeah. This film is about a few different things through that telling of this story. One is it's about God and what gods can be and man's search for God. And so Kubrick himself, after doing some research, doesn't believe in any monotheistic religion that is fairly prevalent in society. He thinks more of like, if there is a god, it's probably some sort of like alien space being that is manipulating humans. And so the monoliths, the black pillar things, are creations from other beings in space that are significantly more advanced than us. They look at us like animals in a zoo or like ants, like trying to guide us in the right direction by using these monoliths. And the monolith itself is this impenetrable black thing. And God to Kubrick is impenetrable, and we cannot communicate with God. He can only communicate to us. And we are these like frail, small beings with like temporary bodies. And the monolith unlocks the human potential as we go through our evolution. And at the end, once Bowman right. has reached this like multidimensional state, this like new space-time thing that he's in, the monolith unlocks our human potential. And as Bowman is in the bed, laying there, reaching for the monolith as he's dying, that's invoking the art of what is it called? Adam and God by Michelangelo. When Adam is reaching for God, Bowman is the new first human. He is this new enlightened being, which was the goal of the monoliths and their origins, whoever created them. And so that is like what the monoliths are, what they represent, what the space child thing is, the crazy space trippy thing, and how looked at the humans as inferior to him after the chess match. And so he was like, if I get to Jupiter, that's the mission. The humans are dispensable. And so the tool has turned on the creator, which is kind of ironic because in this film, the first tool ever created was immediately used as a weapon. And we have that iconic cut of throwing the bone up in the air and then the match cut of a bone, the original tool and weapon, to a space laser cannon thing pointed at the Earth. And so, yeah, basically our what Kubrick is trying to say is for Bowman to evolve to the next stage of humanity, he has to kill Hal. Like, our destiny isn't to stagnate and rely solely on technology, but to continue evolving as a species. And if you look at it that way, you have the different like acts of the film almost. Our current condition, like humans currently and in the film, I think Kubrick views us as unstable. Like, we are not fully evolved as beings. And so we have many tendencies that are similar to the apes at the dawn of man. The first two chapters of the film, while in totally different times and spaces and locations, are very similar. It's these awkward social interactions between different parties. It's this experience with the monolith. It's this curiosity, this questioning, this very primal reaction to the people around you and the things in your environment. Even though we've gone to space, we still, as a social beings, haven't really changed that much. And so I think what Kubrick is saying is our current state as people, we are like the missing link of then reaching the final stage of evolution. And so we have to like look away from the external, our focus on creating technology, and then look inwardly and how we can evolve as a species and as a being. So, yeah.
Okay. I like, and I mean, to go with that, I think we've clearly established that as a technical film, this film is revolutionary for its time. That rotating set cost $750,000 to build, and their budget was supposedly $10 million. So a tenth of their budget, pretty much.
Wow.
Maybe not exactly, but okay, 7.5% of their budget was spent on this one set that was 38 feet wide. And I mean, just when you think about like the logistics, like there's that one shot where the one astronaut is sitting at a table and the other one's like walking towards him. Like, that one guy had to be strapped down and like have his hair gelled to where it didn't move, have his food put, like everything had to be like fixed so that like as it moved, he wasn't actually moving whatsoever. I guess where I end up on this film is when I initially watched Tree of Life, which has its own opinions from people we don't need to get into, like, my original thought was, if normal movies are a novel, that was a poem. And I kind of feel the same way about this. Like, this is another movie that you can't look at on the same spectrum that you look at other narrative movies. It's just not comparable in a lot of different ways. And so, and ultimately, you know, with poems, my thought is you either like them or you don't, you either connect with them or you don't. Sometimes things fall by the wayside and you don't. And this was ultimately just something that, like, I didn't connect with. Because I've been emotionally unattached to films before and still found them interesting. And I think there's just one too many things that were kind of on my list of things that make me push away. That I ultimately was just kind of like, I get it, or I don't fully get it. Nobody gets it. I understand the appeal of it to people, but it's just not for me. Like, I was just kind of, it just wasn't for me.
I mean, Cameron, I'm with you. Like, I think I've spent maybe a little bit more time, or like a little bit, I've probably overanalyzed it just because I can't get it out of my brain. I mean, this is still, based on my first watch experience, it was not enjoyable. Like, I didn't like watching it as much as I think I respect it, and I like what questions it's made me ask and like the thought train it's made me go on. I think I do want to watch it again, but I mean, I'm with you. There's a lot here not to like. Kubrick is like, he puts you in a wrestling match with this film.
Right.
And a lot of that has to do with the things that are technically amazing, like the cinematography, the score, the sound design. All of those things are just like so hauntingly beautiful and like slow and methodical, which is hard. And also, I mean, like, we're watching this film 50 years after the culture that it was created. Like, our palettes are totally different now than they were 50 years ago. This film certainly holds up from a technical perspective, but like, it's hard. It's kind of hard to watch now in 2018.
Yeah. And I'm curious how much of it is that, that, you know, we're so far removed from a time where this is revolutionary, to enjoy it. I want to like this movie so much, but I just, it's so frustrating. Oh yeah. No.
Yeah. I think you're letting the prestige of the film get in the way of how you feel about the film.
Right. Like, I would love to be able to be like, have you seen the magnificence of this? But I can't. Like, it's just not, I don't know. It's just not for me. It's really frustrating. You guys, I don't know what it is, but there's part of me that like takes a certain delight in being a part of.
It's okay. It's okay to not like it.
Like, film culture, and in being able to be like, wow, yeah, I agree, that film's amazing. And be able to share in that enjoyable time in film. Like, I don't ever enjoy disliking a film, but there's something like extra weird here in that it's this much loved, and I don't care what people think, or like, if it's not like that, I'm like worried like that somebody's going to come and be like, well, you can't, I don't, you're not allowed to review because you didn't like this, whatever. I think it's more like I have this in my head, this idea of what this movie, like the hype around this movie. And I ultimately then at the end get to a place where it's like, wow, that was a letdown of like years of it being talked up.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with films like these, because, I mean, I'm going to get some hate for this. I still haven't seen The Godfather. I kind of expected film school to, like, show me these things.
Right.
Didn't happen. And I just haven't gotten around to it. And I'm afraid. Yeah,
I haven't
I'm
seen The Godfather
that
either.
The God,
I haven't seen it
what
either.
What the hell is wrong with us?
And so there is our next episode 2 of Catch Up will be The Godfather.
God, we're the worst.
Godfather, we're the worst.
But. Yeah, that was the worst. Oh, that was amazing.
that is the worst.
I mean, like, I'm nervous that that movie is going to be overhyped as like the best film ever, and then I'm going to watch it and I'll be like, yeah, it's pretty good. Like, yeah, that's definitely something where when something has become so iconic in a medium and in a culture, and then you see it,
you're not
a part of the discovery process.
Right.
You have this expectation, and then when it's not what you expect, it's a bit of a letdown, or just it puts a sour taste in your mouth. It's like reaching for tea, and then it's actually Coke, and you're like, I like Coke, but I was not prepared for this.
Right. But I also like, so we talk a lot about the bell curve of hype on this podcast, where if you catch a film at a certain point at the beginning, you're on the down, you're before it's gotten too hyped and you're going to be able to enjoy it. Whereas if you catch it in the middle of the hype, there's no way you can enjoy it. And if you catch it after the hype's died down, you'll enjoy it again. I almost think films like this that are, you know, films that are iconic films in film culture always stay at the top of that bell curve. And there's just like, if you catch it way too late, there's just no way to immediately enjoy it, like upon first viewing. There's just no way.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last thing I want to talk about is the fact that they let a cheetah jump on a human in an ape suit.
Was that real?
That was like, for sure kinda real.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I looked it
That's
up because I wanted
amazing.
To know.
That's the best
it looked
part
like
of this
it
movie.
Was, and it was. The light, I know, isn't that great? The light reflecting in the cheetah's eyes was a total accident. It came from the projector
That's
that
was so cool.
projecting
it was
awesome. The mats up on
oh,
the back of the set. Yeah, I know. It was super cool. So I feel like I know we're kind of winding down. I have found this great quote from a book that was written about the making of this movie. And it was about people watching in the theater. And it says, but a few months into the release, they realized a lot of people were watching it while smoking funny cigarettes. Someone in San Francisco even ran right through the screen screaming, "It's God." So
yeah, there you go. That space sequence, I was like, I kind of wish I was high right now because I feel like this isn't going to stop anytime soon.
I'll speak for myself, but we did not. When I was watching it, I did not have enough drugs to appreciate this, apparently.
I had none.
I took a LSD enema right before I started.
I don't think that's
God,
how LSD
please,
works.
Goodness. Please cut that.
Oh, why? That's funny.
I like how you say it and it's like, it's funny, right?
Right, guys?
All right. So the way that we're going to do ratings on these catch-up shows is a little bit different from how we normally do an ABC type rating. There's three ways that we can rate this film. Either it's overhype, it deserves the hype, or it's underhyped. So, Jake, what is your rating for this film?
Currently, it is overhyped in terms of like the film watching experience. It is adequately hyped in all of the ways that it's melted my brain and sent me on these crazy sci-fi thoughts of like, what is humanity? What are we going to do? What is technology? I need to see it again. And I know that I don't really want to, but at the same time I do. And so once I see it again, I feel like I can give a better rating, but yeah, mildly overhyped, but somewhat lived up to the hype in certain areas. Trevor.
I completely agree.
Okay.
I feel like Cam selected this format because he didn't want to hear what HAL grade out of HAL 9000 I wanted to give this film.
Trevor,
I'm intrigued.
Trevor, you know, if you want, what's the number?
It's a HAL 4500 out of a HAL 9000.
Okay, there we go.
Ooh. It's a complete mixed bag.
Let me pull up my calculator really quick. That is 50%.
Okay, we're not. That's not. That doesn't translate to an F. Okay,
you've been Zuckerberged. Moving on. I'm with you guys. Anybody? Social Network. When he's like, wait, hold on, let me check your math really quick. 18,000 plus. Yes, I got the same number.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Best. The best. Okay, wait, really quick. Whenever Mark Zuckerberg was being deposed in front of, you know, Congress, did anybody else just was anybody else just wishing for him to go full Social Network instead of, you know,
I was
Lizard
wishing
Man
that it was
thing?
Jesse Eisenberg instead of Mark Zuckerberg.
I wish that he looked and talked like a human, and I wanted him to stop saying senator and congressman and congresswoman after every single question.
All right. In a lot of ways, this film is overhyped. The only way that it's not overhyped is in the visuals and in the way that it views space travel and all that kind of stuff, which it deserves the hype. Everything outside of that is overhyped, in my opinion. As the kids are saying, don't at me. Let's go ahead and get to our content the week.
I was going to say, in like 2 minutes, you're going to ask everyone to at you.
Yeah, also. No, I am. But for now, don't at me. You can just wait 2 minutes. All right, let's get to our content of the week. Trevor, what is your content of the week?
If you wanted to like this but hated it, you should watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which is similar in a lot of ways, but a little bit more narrative-y. Also, it has a wonderfully deranged performance by Richard Dreyfuss in it.
That is very true. Yeah. All right, Jake, what is your content of the week?
I have two. I'm going to double recommend or re-recommend the soundtrack show because I have been really going through the catalog of it. And guys, it is just so well done. It's hosted by a guy who's worked in the composing, sound design, voiceover world with Lucasfilm for like 20 years. And the things he breaks down in the music and like the storytelling of the soundtrack is just mind-blowing. It will totally change the way you see films like Star Wars and Jaws. I cannot recommend it enough. It is fantastic. And then if you enjoy 2001 A Space Odyssey, or if you didn't, but you really like super heady sci-fi, check out Arrival and Annihilation. Those are by far the two best sci-fi films I've seen in a long time that have made me just like go on crazy what is life tangents in my brain, kind of how this movie did. So check those out.
Yeah, so you guys definitely hit some of my recommends. So I'm just going to go ahead and recommend something that I watched this week that I really enjoyed. And that is that sounds weird for this film. It's a film called The Crash Reel, which follows the story of Kevin Pierce, who was a young snowboarder who had a snowboarding accident and was unable to compete snowboarding anymore. He was a guy who, like, in the late 2000s, early 2010, was the only guy who could beat Shaun White in competition. And just kind of went for a trick and just landed it completely wrong, and it ended his career. And it's kind of just about his journey through all of that, you know, the mental strain that's put on him, and you know, what a traumatic brain injury can really do, which is just kind of terrifying.
Was it Tanya Harding?
What? What do you mean, was it Tanya?
Just saying. What? Only person that could beat Shaun White. Did Shaun White hire Tanya Harding?
Oh my god.
Mess up his snowboard or something.
Nope.
Oh my. I think he hired Sebastian Stan.
Also, with this whole Tanya Harding like resurgence thing, like she's on Dancing with the Stars now. Let's not forget that she did some terrible things.
She kneecapped a little.
Yeah. She should not be the one that we are celebrating right
now.
Well,
it wasn't her, and she may or may not have known about it.
Okay. It's probably... let's be
honest. Trevor, did you see I, Tanya?
No, I did see it. And I've pretty clearly learned that she may or may not have known about it. Also, I think the movie pretty clearly states that all of this may or may not be true.
Yeah.
True. And the 30 for 30.
Yeah. I think 30 for 30 made their own decision. And ESPN's always right. So they said that
Stephen A. Smith is always right. That's what I say.
There we go. That's why they fired Skip Bayless, because he was never right. Hey, yo. All right. That's all we have for this week's episode. We'll be back next week with another review. More than likely, probably Deadpool 2. If you've enjoyed listening to us, please go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review us, and let us know your thoughts. If you want to know more about us, you can go to our website at Popcorn Optional, where you can also find all of our episodes. If you want to interact with us, you can find us on Twitter at Popcorn Optional or Facebook at Popcorn Optional. Let us know what you guys thought of the new segment or any thoughts on 2001 A Space Odyssey that can talk to us about this film, because it's definitely worth talking about. If you want to know more about me, myself, hello, my name is Cameron Salina. You can find me online at 321 Cameron Time. Jake, where can we find you online?
Oh, that was fantastic. Well, if you want to know more about me, listener,
You can go to my website at jakebrown.tv. Trevor.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Turbo Trevor, and you probably won't learn very much about me from either one.
Okay. All right. Until next time, we hope you have a good week. Watch some movies, and in the words of the great Michael Scott, we will be back ASAP as possible.
Bye.
Y'all be good now.